Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Get ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome inside the playbook for a Wednesday here on Patriots.com radio. John Rook with you here. And, we got a pretty good show lined up for you today. Daryl Johnston, former Dallas Cowboy All-Pro fullback and member of the Fox broadcasting crew. He'll be in with Kenny Albert and Tony Siragusa, the broadcast team with Fox, for the Arizona Cardinals game coming up this Sunday. So he's scheduled to join us here in about 10 minutes or so. And you want to stay tuned for that and get his perspective on, well, not only not only the Patriots at this stage of the game with 2 weeks left in the season, but we'll take a look at the whole playoff race in particular and how the season has gone. And we'll run over some things with the Moose in just a little bit and see how that goes. We'll also, a little bit later on in the program here, from Eric Scalavino, of course, from Patriots Football Weekly, will check in with us as he does on Wednesdays. And we'll also hear from Stephen Gostkowski. Of course, he became one of the two Patriot players to reach the Pro Bowl. After we left you yesterday at 4 o'clock Eastern time, the Pro Bowl's teams were announced officially, and Gostkowski and Welker were the two selections for the Patriots. And I have to admit right off the bat, it doesn't come as a surprise at all. I thought there was a chance that a guy like Logan Mankins might get in, as we discussed with Brian Lowe yesterday, but it doesn't really come as a surprise. Even though running game-wise, this offensive line may have arguably had a better year this year than they had last year. The fact is that they don't have a dominating rusher, and this is the unfortunate part of the Pro Bowl voting. Most everybody looks at things only skin deep. They really don't take the time to look at a team production as opposed to an individual production. Happens all the time. And I realize that this is not an exact science. It's a very inexact science. There are a lot of snubs. But what I would want to ask you is take a look at the AFC in particular. And just for practical purposes, let's stay with the AFC because this is the conference, of course, in which the Patriots reside. And I'm sure you have your own thoughts about the NFC as well. And if you'd like to contribute those, you certainly can do it. But in the AFC, looking at the roster of the Pro Bowl players, based on what we talked about and who we thought might make it and who we thought, at least stood a good chance of making it yesterday. Who on that roster, offense and defense, does not deserve to be there? Who does not deserve to be there? I want to look at this just a little bit differently today. Rather than talk about Pro Bowl snubs, because to me, I mean, it's easy. It's really easy to look at guys statistically who are snubbed and left off the Pro Bowl roster. I want you to take a look at it from a little different perspective today and tell me who you believe does not deserve to be there. And I got to tell you, I got one. I got one that stands out big time. And I know why he's there. But I think that there were more qualified candidates for this game at that position. And my biggest doesn't deserve to be there is Brett Favre. Now, before you think that I'm, you know, committing some sort of a sin here, let me explain why I think the way I do. Maybe you concur, maybe you don't. This is not anti-Jets, okay? Let me first of all say, this is not anti-Jets. I respect the rivalry with the Jets in the AFC, very much so. Every Patriots fan should. I think Patriots-Jets can be the new Cowboys-Redskins, and I've long thought that. And the NFL is so much better when you have active, vibrant rivalries. And to me, simply because of the, shall we say, news that's been traded back and forth by these organizations over the last year or two, especially since Eric Mangini became coach, there's no reason why the Jets shouldn't be the chief rival for the Patriots. I kind of look at it that way. A lot of fans feel that Miami still is. We've talked about this before. Not only Miami, but Pittsburgh would certainly be considered a rival. Indianapolis is certainly considered a rival. But I'm talking about, you know, to me, a rival is someone that you see more than once, that some bad blood is definitely spilled out on the field. And I think you have more of a chance to do that and develop that with a team within your own division, because it's always two games against those guys. In the last few years, let's face it, the rest of the AFC East has not been up to snuff, not up to the Patriots level anyway, and so it was really hard to have a quote-unquote rival in the truest sense of the word. I think we got that back now. So this is not anti-Jet, but I think, you know, the quarterbacks that made the AFC team, Jay Cutler, Peyton Manning as the starter, and Brett Favre, I'm going to guess and say Favre got in because of the whole MVP thing. I mean, let's face it. Would New York have been a playoff team if they still had Chad Pennington? Maybe. You can't say definitively. Favre could be the instigator, the one, the individual, the player that kind of helped get them over the top. We don't know. We're not in the huddle. We don't know. We're not at practice. We don't know what's going on internally in that organization. But if for my money, even though his numbers might not be as good as Favre's overall, and I think they're fairly similar, I would have selected, in this instance, Ben Roethlisberger. I'm not saying Matt Cassel, even though I think Matt Cassel certainly deserves some mention based on the year he had. I thought Roethlisberger would probably get the third spot and probably deserve it.
I'd agree with you, John.
Yeah. Thanks, Eric, for chiming in on this one. Eric Scalavino, obviously, from Patriots Football Weekly. I just kind of felt, you know, like, why would they do this? Is this just some sort of a... Are they just placating Favre here? Because Roethlisberger, when you look at the schedule that Pittsburgh went through and they won some of these games, man, that's a hell of a job.
Yeah, anybody who listens to the other show knows that I'm no fan of Ben Roethlisberger in general, but I can, you know, be objective about what I see. And from what I saw this year, he was one of the best quarterbacks in the AFC, Roethlisberger was. Mm-hmm. And I thought for sure he was a lock to get in the Pro Bowl. I agree with you that Favre has had a better year than maybe some people would have expected, and by some people I'm including myself in that.
Yeah, not a terrible year.
Not a terrible year, but by no means Pro Bowl worthy.
I didn't think so.
I wouldn't think at all. And I just wonder now if this inflates his ego even more, makes him even more determined to want to come back and play next year.
Yeah.
I hope it doesn't, because I'm sick of seeing him, to be honest with you. I mean, it's just enough's enough.
Well, I would think that Pennington would even deserve some from that aspect. If you're telling me that Favre was a big reason of the Jets' resurgence, mm-hmm. well, then even more so, Pennington deserved it because of the Miami, where they came from, doesn't he?
Sure. He certainly deserves consideration. But, you know, based on what their teams have done as well, I think Roethlisberger has it on either of those two guys.
And well, I just find the whole thing, you know, I realize that, you know, they do this probably on purpose just to tweak our noses, you know? I mean, because we'll talk about it,
yeah.
You know? And invariably, my guess would be Favre and certainly some other guys on this team that got named yesterday will probably say no thanks anyway because of, you know, injuries or whatever the reason they come up with. And maybe a guy like Roethlisberger or whomever will get on the team ultimately, which is fine. But sometimes I just wonder what the heck people are looking at.
I think that's more of a reputation vote than anything else. You know, Favre's getting in, I think, was more, you know, sort of paying homage to what he's done in his career. Mm-hmm. And then he makes that big melodramatic move in the offseason, going to the Jets and leaving mm-hmm. the Packers behind. And, you know, they've had a decent year, the Jets. You know, they might win the AFC East. They, you know, it remains to be seen what they do in the playoffs, but they've done enough that so maybe they're giving him too much credit for that turnaround by giving him this nod in the Pro Bowl. I agree with you, though. I think it's a little far-fetched to think that he had that kind of a season.
Well, let me ask you then the question that I pointed out to everybody here at the top of the show. Rather than look at it from a Pro Bowl snub perspective, who got put on this team that doesn't deserve to be there?
Well,
in your estimation.
Well,
I mean, do you have the list in front of you?
I actually don't have it in front of. Oh, okay. Wait a minute. Hold on. I think I do have it. No, wait. I think it was on Paul's side of the desk. Yeah, okay. I have it here. Okay. Let me just give a quick perusal.
I'm looking pretty much from an AFC perspective here, but because mm-hmm. that's obviously affects the Patriots the most. But.
Yeah, I actually, Jay Cutler, I think you can argue, didn't deserve to be there.
Yeah,
he had some good games, but I think he had a better first half of the season than a second half.
Mm-hmm.
Just from what I remember off the top of my head, although. It's tough because none of these guys at quarterback really, really stood out, unlike last year when you had Brady and Manning, mm-hmm. who were clearly at the top of their games, and it was, you know, a matter of who's that third one that you want to throw in there.
Right.
I don't think anybody really had an overwhelming season at quarterback, which is why I think Castle could have easily gotten consideration as a Pro Bowl pick this year. Do you?
Yeah, I do think he could have gotten it, to be quite honest with you. I looked at the stats, I don't know if it was this morning or yesterday morning, one or the other, but he, I think, ranks sixth in the league in terms of either percentage or rating or something like that within the conference, I should say. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I could see why a couple of the guys were actually ahead of him, but I think one of the quarterbacks, and again, I'd have to look at it somewhere, and I'm not sure where it is, but one of those guys, either Cutler or Favre, maybe it was even Manning, I'm not sure, one of them is ranked behind him. And so I'm thinking, well, then that really shouldn't have affected his candidacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you have to look at big picture here and say, what kind of an effect did this quarterback have on his team? Where would this team be if they didn't have him? And, yeah, I think you have to look at it, in a sense, from an MVP perspective, at almost every position. You know, who has been most valuable to their team? Isn't that really what we're talking about here in terms of being all pro or, you know, all star?
Valuable to your team and
yeah.
and standing out among your peers at a certain position.
Right. You know, that's to me what really kind of stands out. But, yeah, he certainly should have gotten some mention. He may ultimately, who knows who is on the pecking order, I assume, based on the vote that they just kind of go down the list until guys stop saying either yes or no one way or the other in terms of replacement players, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how that works, to be quite honest with you. But anyway, that's what I'm kind of looking at from a perspective in terms of the rosters are concerned. Rather than say who got snubbed, who shouldn't be there? Who should not be there? I have to tell you somebody else who I thought was a little bit of a surprise, and it sounds like I'm going to pick on the Jets. Darrell Revis made the team defensively, and I guess maybe that's just the old school in me. I'm not sure about rookies. Rookies really have to be special. Did he have that special year in your estimation?
I think he had a better year than he had last year.
Oh, that's right. He's 2 years.
He's the second. He's okay. the second year guy.
That's right.
But
thank you.
Yeah, he certainly played a lot better than he did a year ago. I don't think he really made much of an impact last year. Unlike a guy like Jerod Mayo.
Yeah.
Who you could argue was even Pro Bowl worthy, or at least
well,
worthy
you can make
of consideration.
The argument. I don't have a problem with him not being on the team. Only because of the fact that he is a rookie. So, all right, we are joined now inside the playbook by Darrell Johnston. He'll be a part of the Fox NFL call on Sunday here at Gillette Stadium, along with Kenny Albert and Tony Siragusa. Darrell, it's great to talk to you. Thanks for spending a couple of minutes of time with us today.
No problem, guys. How you doing?
Good. Excellent. Doing well. Thanks. By the way, I have to tell you that one of our Patriots Football Weekly guys owns your Moose jersey from the Dallas Cowboy days, and he says he'll wear it proudly to the game on Sunday just for you.
Thank you.
How much do you still get that from fans?
Still quite a bit at the stadiums. You know, not so much around town here. I'm getting to the point where I've been away from the game enough that it doesn't happen so much here, but still get quite a bit of it when you get to the stadiums on Sundays.
Do they even recognize you anymore? You look like you slimmed down a bunch from when you were blocking for Emmitt Smith and those guys.
Well, you know, now even more so than before. You know, I used to get looked at like, you know, people couldn't place me. They would see me and, gosh, he looks familiar, but I don't know where I would know him from. And now that you have the, you know, the face mask off and the helmet off and they get to see you on Sundays, and it's easier for them to recognize you. So actually, I get it probably more now than I did when I played.
Wow, that's interesting.
Well, it's always better to be, you know, hey, aren't you, or hey, didn't you used to be, than to not be anybody at all.
It has its moments at times. Some, you know, you have those busy schedules, and sometimes you're in a rush, and you feel bad when you're like, I'd love to stay and chat, but I really can't right now.
Yeah. Got the flight to catch. All right, let's look at the game then, because it's kind of a unique matchup. The Patriots certainly need this game in order to stay alive in the playoff race. Arizona is already there as a division champion, so how much wind is taken out of Arizona's sails, do you think, coming into the game?
You know, I think they're trying to balance that fine line of, you know, we've won in the division. We don't want any of our key guys to get injured that got us to this point. But, you know, we really haven't played all that well down the stretch. And, you know, we kind of need to get on a little bit of a roll and get some momentum before we go into the playoffs. The other thing is they haven't traveled well yet to the East Coast. You know, they lost at Washington. They lost at New York. They lost at Philadelphia. To go through the NFC, they're going to have to go to New York. They're probably going to have to go to Carolina. Or even if it's Tampa, you know, whatever they're doing, they're going to have to go east. And then the Super Bowl's in Tampa this year, too. So any goals that they have in place from the start of the season, you know, one of the biggest problems that they've had all year, they're going to have to face directly in the playoffs. And this would be another great opportunity to go east, to win a game against a quality opponent that's got to fight for their playoff spot. And just get some momentum going into the playoffs.
And we talked to one of their beat guys yesterday, and the fact is that they're not really expecting too much. The fact is that there are only 13 players on that roster that have ever been in the playoffs before, so they're not sure they know how to win at this stage of the game, and they simply think that this team could improve by just playing well this week. And to me, that just sounds really a little surprising, to be quite honest with you.
I don't think so. I think they have to do more than play well. I don't buy into that. I don't think, you know, you don't learn a lesson from losing. There were some people that said, you know, maybe this is something the Giants needed when they lost to Philadelphia. I don't think anything good comes from losing. And even if you came to the East Coast and played well and lost, I don't think anything positive comes from that, because there's still doubt there. But the only way you get experience in the playoffs is going through that situation. And, you know, I'm sure that, the Patriots dealt with it before their run started. You know, when they first came into the position to be a playoff team, you know, it had been a while since they'd been there. So, you obviously go through that time where, you know, some of your roster is not going to have a lot of playoff experience on it. But, you know, we had it in Dallas. You know, our first time in the playoffs in 1991, we didn't have a lot of playoff experience. But, you know, you have confidence going in because of how you played during the regular season. You know, we were able to win our first game. But you have to create your own experience. And I just don't think coming all the way east and being competitive is something that they can hang their hat on.
Right. Well, here's the thing with the game. Obviously, we've talked about all of the playoff scenarios and what the Patriots have to do. They've obviously got to win. They still need a little bit of help, but they may know by kickoff on Sunday whether or not that some of that help has already arrived. That is, if Baltimore can go out on the road and lose at Dallas, and the Patriots have a way to get into the playoffs as a wild card. As you've looked at the Patriot team this year, what do you think is the most surprising aspect of it from a positive standpoint, and then from a negative standpoint, in your estimation at this stage?
I think the best thing they've done is they've overcome the injury situation. And we had Cincinnati last week, and, you know, we asked for, you know, Cincinnati's games missed by starters, and they were fifth in the NFL with games missed by starters. Every team that was above them, so the top five of the teams in the NFL with games missed by starters, were teams that were just having a terrible year. Detroit was in there. Seattle was in there. It was Cincinnati. Can't remember the other team, but there's the Patriots at number three. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the only team in there that's got a shot at getting into the playoffs. Losing your franchise quarterback week one, you know, being able to overcome all that, I think the most positive thing is they've shown that they are still a very, very good team. And the same thing that people talked about the Giants this year as maybe not being the most talented group in the NFL, but the team that plays the best, I think that was something that people thought about the Patriots during their great run, and I think that what they've done this year is demonstrated that again. They've got great depth. They have a system in place where guys are able to step in and do a great job, and I don't know if you can get a better example of that than having to face the injury situation they had this year and watching how they've handled that.
Yeah, it's pretty clear to see that defensively where this team struggles the most right now, a lot of that is because of due to injury to a lot of the starters. But there are a couple of guys that the Patriots just picked up again basically off of the street in familiar names in Junior Seau and Roosevelt Colvin have come in and played about half or a little bit over half each of the last two games since they stepped up. How tough do you think that really is? And I ask you, from a perspective of having been a former player and having gone through, you know, a lot of the physical nature of this game, as you got a little bit older in the game as well, what do you think it's like for those guys right now?
Well, the big thing is there's familiarity with the system that they're coming back into. So yeah, they are coming off the street, but they're coming back to a team that they played for. They know the system. But it's hard. You're shifting gears. And, you know, I'm amazed at Junior Seau. I'm amazed that he's still playing at the level he's playing at right now. You know, he plays a physical position. It's not easy to do. And, you know, for him to be back out there again. And the last time he got hurt, you know, you were wondering if that was enough to just say, you know, maybe it's time for me to just ride off into the sunset.
Right.
And, you know, here he is back again. So it's very impressive. It's very impressive what Roosevelt and Junior has done. But really what Junior Seau has done. I'm very impressed, and there's a few guys that I watch around the league and see where they are at the stage of their career and still see at the level they're playing. It's pretty impressive out there with those young guys.
Darryl, you also, you know, talked about Arizona having to come east so many times this year, and they haven't had that much success doing that. There's the forecast is calling for some snow this weekend up here in New England, and that could also prove to be a mitigating factor here, because New England in the Belichick era is undefeated. Actually, lifetime, they're undefeated in games in the snow. How much do you think that will affect Arizona's passing offense?
Well, we'll have to see. Obviously, everybody talks about the weather in the East Coast. You're talking about a team that really doesn't really want to run the football that much, so it would be a big shift in what their game plan would be. But Kurt Warner likes to wear gloves. I mean, he's gotten back into wearing his gloves. He's been wearing them all season long. You know, he wore them when he was out in Arizona when we had the Giants game, and they're playing indoors. And, you know, even with, you know, some nice elements, you know, he feels comfortable wearing the gloves. So, you know, maybe that helps him in a way. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see what kind of impact it does. You know, weather is what you make of it. You go to a game, and whether it's hot and you're worried about how the heat is going to impact you, whether it's cold, whether it's snowing, it's really what the players decide to let that impact them. Now, if they continue to read all week long, you know, hey, you guys are going to struggle, you don't run the ball, then it eventually could become an issue for them. But I'm sure that Coach Wisenhunt is not going to allow that to happen. He's going to make sure the guys know that, hey, you know, I was in Pittsburgh and we played it in inclement weather. We were still able to throw the ball. You know, don't worry about it. Let's execute our plan. Let's not do something we're not comfortable doing.
That's a good brings up an interesting point in terms of Ken Wisenhunt you bring up there, Darryl. Why do you think he has made the difference, it would appear, here in Arizona when some others before him couldn't get the job done?
He's got quite a bit of talent out there right now. I know that there's been talent there for a while. But I think you have to look at what Clancy Pendergast has done with the defense as a coordinator, you know, what Todd Haley has done with the offense. I mean, Kurt Warner has kind of had a resurgence. Their offensive line has played a little bit better this year. Defensively, they've played better up front. So it's hard to put your finger on one thing. But I just think maybe, you know, his approach is a little bit different than what Dennis Green or some of the other coaches had. He seems to be maybe a little bit more of a disciplinarian. You know, kind of a straight line type of guy. So hard to say exactly what it is, but, you know, there's going to be a number of different reasons, and I think he's got a good staff surrounding him.
Were you at all surprised that they put five players on the Pro Bowl team?
No. I think, when you look at Larry Fitzgerald and Anquan Boldin and Kurt Warner the year they've had, I mean, it's pretty impressive. So I'm not surprised. I really wasn't surprised to see that.
As somebody who has faced them on the field and has, you know, covered a lot of their games recently as a broadcaster, Darryl, do you think that this is maybe Arizona's best chance to make something happen in the postseason?
This year?
Yeah, this year's team.
No. They should. They've built some stability. They should have an opportunity to make this a stepping stone, in my opinion. I don't think this is their best opportunity. You know, I think they've got a young team. They've got some talent. You know, it's just come together. There's going to be a lot of positive momentum going into the offseason that they can build on. So I think that this is hopefully the first step in a process that, that kind of carries them. The NFC West is down a little bit right now, and I don't see it turning around real quickly. So it could be a team that benefits from a division in transition for a while also.
Is this a chemistry issue, you think, with this Arizona team as to why they're not quite yet maybe at the level that they obviously aspire to be? Or do they still lack, in your estimation, a couple of pieces of the puzzle in terms of the talent level on the field?
No, I don't think it has anything to do with chemistry. Obviously, I think they need some improvement on the offensive lines and some areas there. They need to get a little bit more balance in what they're doing. But I think there's talent there. I think there's good chemistry there. There's just a few kinks to work out, but it's a team that's moving in the right direction for the first time in a while. I think they're starting to become the team that a lot of people thought they were going to be, 2 and 3 years ago.
Okay.
Hey, guys, sorry to interrupt this early, but I've got to head out. I've got to get to.
You got it. Appreciate the time.
All right. Hey, we look forward to being up there this weekend.
Sounds good. Thanks, Daryl.
All right,
Daryl Johnston, again, who will be a part of the Fox television broadcast coming up this Sunday as the Fox folks have the national TV game, and he'll be with Kenny Albert and Tony Siragusa in the booth, and the goose down on the sideline for the Patriots and the Cardinals. 1 o'clock Eastern time kickoff here at Gillette. So there you go.
Rare
a little
Fox
bit of insight
broadcast
anyway.
There, John.
Sounded like a busy guy, didn't he?
Yeah, was he in an airport or
sounded
somewhere?
Like it.
He's a
must be catching a flight.
Yeah, maybe he's on his way up to New England. They get here pretty early in the week.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely was noisy wherever he was, so that's fine. No
rare,
big deal. Well, we understand what the deal is. Sometimes you got to go, and you
got
to go.
Got that rare Fox broadcast for a Patriots game this week.
Yeah, well, when the determination of that is, somebody asked me that earlier today.
Yeah, it's if it's a two AFC teams playing, mm-hmm. CBS gets the broadcast.
Right.
If it's an NFC team who's the visiting team.
Let me simplify.
Fox gets it.
The away team has, if it's an
right.
NFC team that's away, Fox gets it. AFC team away,
right.
CBS gets
all AFC-related games. Fox gets all NFC-related games. And like Tugender said, if it's whoever the visiting conference is gets that network.
Which is why when the Patriots have been on the road recently out west, you've seen the games on CBS.
Against NFC teams, yeah, like
right.
San Fran and Seattle, right. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And, that now obviously last week it would have been a CBS anyway because it was an AFC team.
Correct.
Yeah. So there you go. Okay. Just a little clarification, and I'm, tried to explain that, and they were like, huh? How come they do that? And I'm like, well, because that's just the rules. That's what they do. So that's why you only see maybe a couple of Fox games a year where the Patriots are involved because they
right.
only have a couple of instances where they would be a road team playing at an NFC team, depending on where the rotation is and all that kind of stuff. So. All right, so that's good stuff. At least a little bit of insight there. Frankly, here's the thing that bothers me the most about the game, and I think it's interesting, Eric, that the forecast does call for looks like some inclement weather. We're just not sure how much or what kind of quality or quantity it might be on Sunday. But for Arizona, I think they have a chance to beat the Patriots on Sunday. They would have to rely almost exclusively, I think, on Warner finding his two big physical mismatched receivers against the Patriots secondary. Would you agree with that?
Oh yeah, I mean it. Bolden and Fitzgerald are
the Patriots have no matchup
tandem.
For those guys. They have no matchup.
Yeah, it's pretty tough. I mean, Ellis Hobbs has been
no matchup for those guys.
Well,
and that's with all due respect to Ellis. Okay, he's had a good year as a kick returner. It's been so-so. I think at best as a defensive back, it's gotten a little better. I think
when I
try to look at the big picture here,
he's had his moments.
They've had to rely on him this year.
Yeah, he's had his moments. This is definitely the best year he's had one-on-one with other receivers. And I think mm-hmm. part of that is I think he's playing closer to the line than he has in previous years.
Well, that's the thing that infuriates me the most about Delta O'Neal. I mean, he was way too soft on the receivers.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just – it's so soft. It's like, hello, dude, you want to get in the game?
Yeah. And I wonder, though, sometimes if that has anything to do with how healthy they are. Because in previous seasons, especially last year, Hobbs was playing – with a couple of different injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, a lot of times he would play about 10 yards off the ball, and guys would take what he was giving them, and
right.
a lot of short completions. And I wonder if that's because in order to jam the guy and play tight coverage, you need all that strength because you're going up against guys as receivers who are typically bigger than the cornerbacks are.
Sure, I think that's a logical reason for it all, and that's why teams have burned the Patriots like that, because if they have gone up in press coverage, you know, frankly, they just can't handle some of those bigger receivers physically.
Right.
And they get beat deep.
And I would argue, I guess, that this year Hobbs has done a better job at that and has played closer to the line, and I think that has to do with the fact that, for the most part, he's been healthier than he has in previous seasons.
Let's suffice it to say that in playing those two guys, you're going to have to get some rollover coverage help, okay? You're going to have to get some safety help.
Oh, absolutely.
And the problem is here is that, you know, they've got two guys who are big and physical and fast.
Right.
And so somebody's going to be left in man coverage, and so it's going to be up to Kurt Warner to check off and find out which guy is going to be the one that's going to get the least amount of coverage here.
Right.
Because you can't double everybody unless, of course, you go with a dime package the whole game. And frankly, I don't know that that's practical.
Right.
So, you know, in that regard, if the weather is nasty on Sunday, that only helps the Patriots. I don't know that the Cardinals would be equipped enough to be able to pound it out between the tackles. I don't think so.
Well, that rookie has run pretty well for them. His name's escaping me right now. Hightower, yes, thank you.
Hightower, right.
So I think they might have a little bit of a threat there, just on the limited amount that I've seen from him. What concerns me a little bit more is on the left side of the Patriots' defense at corner, Jonathan Wilhite has been starting the last few games in place of O'Neal. O'Neal has come in after a few series, and they've sort of rotated in and out. But I wonder if the game plan is going to be, if Wilhite starts, that they automatically start picking on him on that side because he's a rookie, and he's barely bigger than I am, and you know, he's about the same size as Hobbs, which is, you know, pretty short, 5'8", 5'9", at best. And Bolden and Fitzgerald are two really tall receivers, really big physical guys. So Hobbs, with a little bit of experience under his belt, and if Wilhite starts, he's clearly, you know, just getting used to playing on the edge because he came in and made the team as a slot guy, and that's kind of what his role was at Auburn, too.
Right.
So this is sort of a new area for him, even though it's the same position. It's a different part of the field that he's playing. And to get matched up against a guy like that, you know, in the slot, you're facing guys who are more your size, more your speed, maybe. Now he has the added pressure of going up against one of the two best, you know, receivers that they'll face this season. So I wonder if that'll be the target right off the bat, if he sees that, if Warner sees that they throw the rookie out there, automatically start throwing to that side. I think Wilhite's played well in his defense. I think he's done very well, actually, coming in and playing a position like that. And Bill Belichick talked about it today at his press conference, how much Wilhite has developed this year in such a short period of time, and especially over the course of the last month, where he's been moved to the outside and has gotten a lot more of his reps over there. I just think it'll be interesting going up against a veteran quarterback like Warner and a couple of really big targets like Arizona has. That'll be the matchup that I'm going to be looking at most, is where Wilhite is and how well he holds up against this offense.
Well, I think it's certainly, at least when you look at it on paper, you have to think, well, Arizona's probably got themselves a little bit of an advantage there. But how much does that actually carry over to, you know, controlling the football, keeping it out of the Patriots' offensive hand? Because, frankly, Arizona's defense has been, let's just say it has been lackluster at best, at least in this streak where they've lost 3 out of 4. I still have a hard time believing that Tavares Jackson threw for 4 touchdowns against their secondary last week. That blows me away.
I was amazed by that score. We were sitting there in the press box in Oakland, and you know, obviously there were other games on the television screens that were in there, and we saw the 21-0 flash up when it was about the time when New England was up 21-0.
Mm-hmm.
We all looked at each other like, are we seeing that correctly? You know, Arizona at home getting blown out. It was I was really shocked by that, and you know, kind of brings back memories of that game earlier this year when they came to the Meadowlands to play the Jets.
Yeah,
and neither team could stop the other offense. It was, you know, that back and forth game that the Jets eventually won. But yeah, you're right. I mean, New England certainly has its chance to put up points, and it did so last week against a weak Raiders defense. And you know, if that's the case again with the Cardinals this week, you know, we could be in for another high scoring game again if the snow doesn't equal things out, depending on how much we get here.
Yeah. What's the latest you saw in terms of the weather? Did you see something earlier today?
Or? Yeah, I looked right before it came on the show. So about 1 o'clock or so, I did a little weather.com search, try to get the forecast for the weekend. And initially, they were saying Friday would get some snow showers and then Sunday and Monday. Now it's looking like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So through the whole weekend, it looks like we're going to get some sort of snowfall. The question is how much does it stick, accumulation, all that. So, and also the timing of when it falls. Right now, some of the models say it could be later in the day on Sunday. So by that point, the game could be over. Who knows? It's still too early to tell. But the threat is there.
Yeah, well, it is, getting to be late December, so anything is to be expected where that's concerned.
Oh, I love it. I hope there is snow. I always love watching games in the snow. And it's a lot more fun to play, I think.
It is. It does kind of add a unique bit of spice to it all, does it not?
Oh, sure. I mean, I'll never forget that Raiders playoff game here, mm-hmm. the divisional playoff
the
game.
The actual Snow Bowl itself.
Oh, God, that was great football. I'd love that. I love it, John.
Do you know where I was for the Snow Bowl game?
You were probably covering a Friar game. Right? Middle of January?
Yeah.
On the road somewhere, right?
Yeah. I was actually on South Beach in Miami.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
And we were at one of those outdoor, bars up there along Ocean Ave in Miami Beach.
Great spot.
And we had the huge, big flat screen TV set outside. They were a little bit ahead of their time. That was before flat screens really became prevalent.
Uh-huh.
And they had it all set up, and we must have had a crowd of like 50 to 100 people.
Really?
Around the, watching it. And obviously a couple of idiots recognized, who I was. And so every time, Patriots would do something, I'd have to give them a stupid first down thing. It was one of those goofy things.
Were you there for a basketball game?
Yeah, I was there. The Friars were playing the Miami Hurricanes next day.
All right.
And so, so that was what the deal was with that one.
I figured. I was actually in the parking lot in the overflow press box because there were so many credentials for that game. They didn't have enough room in the old press box. So there was a makeshift tent out in the parking lot.
Yeah, I remember when they had to do that for a few of the games at old Foxborough Stadium.
I was there with another television producer that I worked with, sports anchor. We were sitting out there in the parking lot.
Who were you working with at the time?
WPRI-TV in Providence.
Ah, Channel 12. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
And so we were sitting out there in the lot watching the game on television, and then with the last 5 minutes, you're allowed to go, or back in the old stadium, you were allowed to go downfield level during the last 5 minutes of the game,
mm-hmm.
because that's how you got to the Patriots locker room.
Right.
So for the game-winning overtime field goal, I was right underneath the goalposts when Vinatieri kicked it through, and Lonnie Paxton came running up to all of us in the end zone there and started doing his snow angel right in front of us. Pretty memorable time. Never forget that.
That's one of the most enduring memories, I think, of that entire season is Lonnie doing the snow angel and then Tom Brady's look of incredulity,
mm-hmm.
I guess how you pronounce it, after he put his hands to his head.
Yep, and the Super Bowl,
when all the confetti was falling around him after the Super Bowl game. A couple of long-lasting moments from 2001.
Yep.
And frankly, we've made this analogy, I think, several times during the course of this year, but if the Patriots were actually able to get that far, which would be a truly remarkable feat, there would be, I think, the same feeling about this team as going into 2001, like, this is a gravy game. Nobody really expects anything. People outside of, the actual football team themselves, nobody really gave the Patriots a shot against the Rams that year. And I can't imagine anybody would give them a shot against whomever it would be this year, whether it's the Giants or even the Panthers for that matter. I don't, because of, where the Patriots have been and how the road that they've traveled this year. But frankly, as we've said several times, and I got to say it again now, the closer that we get to this thing, and they haven't yet been eliminated, it is still there for the taking. You have to like the fact that this team is full of guys who have been here, done that. They know what it takes to get to the next level and to keep playing into the third season, so to speak. And frankly, there's just a little part of me, and maybe this is just some of the, I accuse Patriot fans all the time, Eric, of being spoiled. Because they are. We're all spoiled by success around here.
Sure.
Everybody is.
Yeah.
Hey, we had a job here because the franchise is spoiled by success. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, I have this radio gig. You have the writing gig. PFW, come on. We all have these jobs because of the success of the team. Sure. If the team stunk, my guess would be we wouldn't be here right now.
Well, it would make things a lot harder, yeah. That's
well, sure. It would certainly make things harder. But I got to thinking the other day, I'm thinking, you know what? This is the first time since we started this, and this is year eight now, year eight of doing web radio. Mm-hmm. You know, the way that we've done it, in the eighth year that we've done this program as well. They actually started the PFW show 1 year prior. It actually started in Coach Belichick's first year mm-hmm. here. And then we came on with a playbook show in 2001. And so I got to thinking, this is the first time maybe that we're looking at not making the playoffs.
Well, you had
the playoff, with the exception of the 9-7 year.
Oh, yeah, 02.
Yeah, in 02. Mm-hmm. I mean, but that went right down to the very end of the season. I think mm-hmm. everybody anticipated we'd be there, and all of a sudden it was an upset. And even though they ended up 9-7, mm-hmm. they didn't get any help, and they obviously didn't make the playoffs. But I'm thinking, wow, this is really unusual that we could actually be eliminated before the end of the season. Now, yeah. Obviously, I don't think it's going to turn out that way because I think next week we're going to decide it all. In fact, this week, and I said this on yesterday's show, this week is really going to decide the playoffs. This one we're going to know. I don't think it's going to come down to next week. I think before next game at Buffalo, I think the Patriots will already know whether they're in or they're not.
I think that that's a probably likely scenario. I would just throw this out there, John, because for consideration, Paul.
Yep.
We were coming down to the press conference earlier today, and Paul mm-hmm. Perillo, our editor, said, "You know what? Just occurred to me. So, what would happen if New England, the Jets, and Miami all lost this weekend? How would that affect the playoff race?" And we started doing some math,
mm-hmm.
and I think we came to the conclusion that it would actually be to the Patriots' benefit if that happened. You know, if they were to lose this weekend, it would be mitigated by the fact that those other two teams had lost, because that sets up the showdown for the Jets and Miami in Week 17,
mm-hmm.
with that loser being completely out of it.
Right.
And depending on which of those teams wins, it could help. New England might have the tiebreaker over the two of them.
How would that happen?
I forget exactly, but we were sort of doing the math up in Paul's office before we came down.
And if the Jets won, it wouldn't help because they'd still have a better division record.
Yeah, but we seemed to come to the conclusion. You know, we only did this for about 5 minutes before we went down, had to drop in and go downstairs. But we seemed to come to the conclusion that it might actually help them if that happened. Now, obviously, it'll help more if New England beats Arizona and one of those other two teams or both of them lose. But if worst case, if New England happens to lose to Arizona this week and those other two teams lose, that it would set up a even more interesting Week 17.
An interesting Week 17.
Well, yeah.
I'm wondering why the dynamics would change if they lose the tiebreaker now with those two teams, which they do because of Jets is divisional record. Are the Dolphins division record or their conference record? I think they lose the tiebreaker to.
I think it might be conference.
Conference, they lose, yeah. Conference record, they lose the tiebreaker to the Dolphins. So how that would change if all three teams lost? Is it because the Patriots would have one less loss in the AFC?
Again, I forgot exactly how the math worked out, but I just remember Paul saying, hey, you know what, this could work to New England's favor. I'll have to go back and double check it, and I'll try to do that before we come back on the air tomorrow, and I'll try to clarify that. But
yeah, that'd be interesting. No, I mean, I think that would be the farthest of the far reaches. I don't think all three teams are going to lose. Although I think the Jets are going to have a hard time with Seattle, Eric. I really do. It's Mike Holmgren's last home game. You know, I think it's going to be difficult. And plus, the Jets have not yet won out west this season.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it all kind of stacks up against them, to be quite honest with you. And I think the scenario is, first of all, here's what I think will happen. I think the Jets will, on Saturday, first of all, I think Baltimore loses at Dallas.
Yeah, I think
so. And
right.
So that opens the wild card wide open for the Patriots to just, you know, slam the door open.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the Baltimore loses, then the Patriots can win two. They're in as the wild card.
Yep.
Baltimore can't do anything about it.
Yep.
And I think that's very likely to happen. But admittedly, it's possible that it doesn't. But on top of that, I think the Jets lose at Seattle. I think probably Miami wins. So what that means then is that you would need Miami to beat the Jets.
Mm-hmm. in week 17?
No. Other way around. You'd need the Jets to beat Miami in the last week for the Patriots to get the division
title. Yeah, for the division, right.
Yeah, for the division. Boy, although the Patriots, by a win at Buffalo, they'd clinch the wild card anyway. With Baltimore losing this Saturday.
Baltimore were to lose.
Correct. So, in that regard, then, Jets lose this week. Then if they beat Miami, Patriots are division champs. I think it's very, very believable in terms of a scenario.
There's certainly more scenarios than you'd like at this point.
Well, you know it kind of gets back to the original point here and I'm glad you kind of helped bring it full circle here, because you know how we love to get off on tangents here.
Oh, yeah.
With time to kill, we get off on all kinds of tangents, don't we? But the thing here is that what this team has done to be in this position, and Darryl Johnson even said that a little while ago, mm-hmm. He said, the overwhelming thing that really lasts with me and sticks with me about this team is the fact that they're third, and he mentioned it, and I'm glad he brought up the number, because that was something I was trying to look up earlier today, and I didn't finish the research, so I apologize for that. But the Patriots are third in total number of starter games lost in the NFL. Third.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe that.
They're the only team in the top five that's right now contending for the playoffs.
That's a testament, I think, to the coaching and to the level of talent of the players who've had to fill in for those guys that have been lost.
Sure.
I mean, I'm pleasantly surprised and happy for Matt Cassel with the way he's played and the way he's attacked this season, I guess, is the way to look at it. He had a great opportunity. When Brady went down, obviously he doesn't want to see his friend get hurt, but him, it was a great opportunity and he took great advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
He's gotten better every week. He's the games they've lost haven't really been, losses that you can put on his shoulders completely. You know, I mean, he's done his part in pretty much every game. And, he's sort of the face of that whole injury situation this year, given who he had to replace. But you're right, with all the other guys, though, I mean, Merriweather had to step up when Harrison went down, and I think he's done that fairly well. The after that San Diego game, when they gave up all those big plays in the passing game to the Chargers, you know, it was looking like that the bottom was going to fall out of that secondary. But I think they've done a decent job of keeping the ball and keeping the play in front of them. They haven't really surrendered any big plays like that, as much as they did in that game. I think that's a testament to the play of Merriweather and even guys like Will Hite and O'Neal, who've had to come in and sort of plug the holes there. Not saying that they're perfect, because they've certainly had their share of giving up plays, whether it's over the middle or just on third down. That's another area where they've struggled a bit at times, but. The old veterans you mentioned with when Darryl was on, Seau and Colvin coming in, and I think it really helps that they're guys who've been in this system, and it's a steep learning curve from when they got here to getting in the game and actually playing. Now they have this situation where I didn't even give you a practice update today.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you. So did they practice today?
They did practice. They practiced outside in the stadium. On the stadium field, yes, and I'm not surprised by that because of what I'm seeing in this weather forecast. I think they're trying to get accustomed to what the conditions are going to be like on Sunday, because today
it's
drizzly.
It is today, for those that are not in the area, today it is windy, it is mm-hmm. cold, it was rainy.
Yep.
Best way to describe it, raw.
Exactly.
And it's very raw today, and we even had sleet and light snow this morning.
That's right, and I think we're going to see a minimum of that on Sunday. At least from what's left over, if not new stuff that we get on Sunday,
right?
Mm-hmm. So they were practicing outside on the field to sort of, I guess, start getting conditioned to that feel. And three guys were missing: James Sanders, free safety, who's been out the last couple of weeks. That's starting to become a little bit of a troubling thing. I thought maybe we'd see him back by this point, but he was out today. That's not to say he won't be back before the end of the week, but not a good sign, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't even seen him in the locker room, which is another bad sign. Usually if you see a guy who's been hurt in the locker room, that's a pretty good indication that he's probably, getting ready to go, if not that week, maybe the next week.
Mm-hmm.
And by in the locker room, I mean during the media portion of our locker room access. And I haven't seen him. Haven't seen hide or hair of him in a while.
Any idea? I mean, obviously, probably not. But I'm just, I didn't realize that he might. I mean, could he be seeking treatment outside of the premises?
I doubt that. I really doubt that because the extensive facilities they have here for that sort of thing. And I don't think his injury is anything that would warrant anything outside. But
interesting.
It's just I was a little surprised that I didn't see him at all, either in the locker room or on the field. But, again, it's only Wednesday. Maybe that could change in the next couple of days. But he remains out. Teddy Bruschi remains out with his situation. But he's still not...
He's not IR'd yet.
No. And Matt Light, who left the Raiders game with a shoulder injury, never came back. Mark Lavoie filled in for him at left tackle for the rest of that game. He was also out today. So those three guys, I guess two of them weren't really too surprising. And Light, you know, Andy Hart expressed some little bit of surprise that Light wasn't out there. He was kind of expecting with the shoulder. He didn't think it was anything that, you know, because the Patriots were up so big in that game against the Raiders, maybe he thought, okay, they just, as a precaution, kept Light out of that game and maybe he'd be back today. But
well, that's what I would kind of think. I mean, well, yeah. First of all, though, I mean, if he – and, of course, to have Bill Belichick come out and say something specific about an injury like he did earlier this year is totally out of character for him. So you're led to believe that everything's okay with Matt. He's not out on the field. I can only surmise from that is that they're just giving him extra time so he can play on Sunday.
Well, that could be, too. Like I said, you know, a lot of times on Wednesdays, guys who were recovering from that previous Sunday's game – or coming back from an injury, Wednesday isn't always the day that they come back. Sometimes it's Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and if it's not Wednesday or Thursday, your chances are pretty slim of being there on Sunday, because if you just come in on a Friday and then the walkthrough on Saturday, that's really not typically enough time to get prepared to play. You know, it's been done before, but at least historically with this team, the likelihood is severely diminished if you don't see a guy on either one of those days.
Right.
So tomorrow will be interesting to see if anything develops there. But and again, he was one of those guys that was not seen in the locker room today.
I also didn't get, you know, in particular, your thoughts individually on both Welker and Gostkowski and whether or not you felt like Logan Mankins or someone along those lines might have gotten a little bit of a snub.
Well, that's funny that you mentioned that name, Logan Mankins, because as I was looking over the list earlier, you had asked me, is there anyone I see on here who made it who probably shouldn't have?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ones that jumped out at me was the AFC starting guards, who are Alan Faneca of the Jets, Chris Dielman of San Diego,
mm-hmm.
and the reserve is Brian Waters of Kansas City. Now, okay, this is Mankins' fourth year, right?
Mm-hmm.
He made it the Pro Bowl last year as his third year. And, you know, ever since he was drafted, guys were kind of, you know, you'd hear a broadcaster saying about how great they thought Mankins was and that how each year he sort of was building more of that reputation. And then finally last year he got the call to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Now, typically with O-linemen, this is what I've seen over the years. Once a guy makes it to the Pro Bowl, it's usually kind of hard not to keep including him year after year. They sort of develop a reputation as being the guy. Like Alan Faneca has developed that reputation.
And that's probably the position, interior lineman like that, is that's the most unfair, because people don't really know in a lot of ways, Eric, what makes and what constitute an all-pro year for an offensive guard. Let's face it.
That's true. And one of the things that you can do if you want to try to analyze an offensive guard, they're the ones typically that have to do a lot of the pulling and running downfield in space on draws, on mm-hmm. on wide receiver screens or even, you know, running back screens. Mankins is out there a lot in space, as is Stephen Neal, the other Patriots guard. And that's an area where if you see a skill position guy with the ball in that situation, his lead blocker is generally going to be a guard or a tackle or a bigger guy downfield. That's a great way to sort of determine if a guard is worthy of Pro Bowl consideration. How well he does out there? Is he athletic? Does he you know, make his blocks? Does he pancake guys? Mankins is always out there and he's always killing people. And if you watch a Patriots game, it's hard not to see him doing that at least a couple of times a game. And I think once he made it last year, I kind of felt like, all right, Mankins has gotten to that point where now he's going to be one of those guys that develops the reputation in addition to his play. He's definitely a solid player. I'm not saying that it's just reputation. But
right.
That's one of those areas where if you watch him pull, he's dominant. It doesn't matter who he goes up against. He crushes people. And I don't see – I don't really know much about this Brian Waters guy, but the Kansas City guard who made it. So I don't really want to say whether or not he deserves it. I mean, he's, you know, cursed on being on a horrible team. But I think you can make a case that Faneca got it with the Jets simply because of, like Favre. They were free agents who went to a new team, and the team is doing well. And so, okay, it must have been because of them. Let's vote them in. Whereas Mankins, I think, who's clearly shown that he's at that level – deserve to be on the team, and maybe he'll still end up getting it. Maybe one of these guys will bow out, depending on what happens in the playoffs or injury wise or whatever. Maybe Mankins will end up going as an alternate, but I think he should have gotten in as a first ballot guy.
I think the one thing that a lot of fans will look at when you look at especially the AFC roster, and you consider the Patriots got two, and you can also look at, and you kind of brought it up, you kind of alluded to it already, Kansas City has two players on the list, and Kansas City's 2-12, and the Patriots are 9-5.
Mm-hmm.
What am I missing here? Especially when you add to the fact that the Patriots are third in the league in terms of, you know, starter games missed, and this team mm-hmm. has overcome adversity that other teams clearly have not, and yet this team is not rewarded for that.
Yeah. It's... The Pro Bowl is often a
there's
very
only one
confusing,
way to put it.
It's
people love to hate on the Patriots.
Well, you know, and especially after the year they had last year, they had eight guys go to the Pro Bowl. They were 18-1. They should have been 19-0. But maybe there's an element to that. But I think you also have to consider that, you know, the fans do get to vote, but the coaches and players are the ones who ultimately, I think, decide this thing. Because
mm-hmm.
If you know, like last week, based on the fan balloting, Gostkowski and Welker weren't even in the top five at their position for as far as votes cast.
Which is, I find
which
almost...
Which I was shocked by to begin with.
Yeah, stunning. I mean, you would think Welker's numbers alone would have him at least up there. Gostkowski, I could see it a little bit more because...
But he was leading the league.
Well, okay, understood. But I don't think, you know, Joe Fan, honestly, and this is outside of New England. New England fans, I probably realize it because New England fans are smart. They follow it. But, you know, Steve Gostkowski, well, who the heck is that? You know, he's only been around for 3 years. So here's a kid that, you know, even though he's up at the top, they're going to go with somebody whose name is a little more familiar, or they're going to vote for their guy, regardless of who their guy is.
Maybe. But I just think in today's age of fantasy football, people are more knowledgeable of players on other teams because they end up having them on their own teams, their own
fantasy
teams.
Well, that could
teams.
Also be true.
So I was really surprised that a guy like Gostkowski, who has such great numbers, wasn't in the fans' the top of their minds when they came to vote. Like you said, maybe they just decided when it came down to that position, it was more of, I'll go with my guy. And maybe more of the people who voted were Redskin fans or whatever, because Sean Swisham, who was leading the league in misses, I think, was leading the votes and at one point, but it all balanced out, and I think the right player got voted in at that position, and certainly I think Welker deserved it this year. You could argue that he deserved it last year too, and
sure.
he's probably going to break his own record this year, so it's probably fitting that he gets it this year. And you know, he's actually had the best year of you know, even with Moss and on this team. He's been the most visible player other than Castle, on the offense. So he was asked about the snub today, and to his credit, he said, you know, I didn't really think of it as much of a snub last year because, you know, look at the guys who did make it. You can't really argue that any of those guys shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, you know, there were just a lot of us, and you know, just someone had to be the odd man out. And this year he's getting his props, so he's happy. He's not complaining. And Gostkowski, I think it's, you know, very rarely when you draft a player to replace somebody as accomplished as Adam Vinatieri, not just at a kicker, but any position, when you draft a guy specifically to take over for somebody else who's had such amazing success, very rarely, I think, and this is just anecdotal, but very rarely do you have the player that you replace meet or exceed what the previous person did. Am I right?
Yeah, I would agree.
I think it's amazing that in just three seasons, Gostkowski has gotten to the level where, and pretty much since he got here, he's been Mr. Consistent. And he's been very accurate. He's been in the 80 or 90th percentile on field goals by the end of the season all three seasons.
90s, yeah.
Yeah, he's been better than you could have asked for. I mean, he's at the point already where it took Vinatieri maybe two or three times as long to get to that level as far as making the Pro Bowl consistently and, you know, making the clutch kicks. You've already got the guy that you wanted to replace him, and they hit a home run with that pick. You got to give it to the Patriots personnel department. They scouted great, and they got the right guy to replace him.
Yep.
So I think, you know, this his third year, kind of like last year with Mankins, in his third year, he got his due, and I think it's much deserved. He's clearly the best kicker I've seen this year.
I can't argue with anything you said. I thought he deserved it from the get-go. When we were going over candidates early this week, that, you know, I thought the two most likely guys to get in would be Welker and Gostkowski, and mm-hmm. thought that there would be a chance for Mankins and maybe even Wilfork, but it was so hard to overcome, I think, the kind of year that Chris Jenkins of the Jets had early in the season, where I mm-hmm. think he probably carried a lot of that momentum in and got a lot of his support from, you know, earlier in the year. But, mm-hmm. Still, I think you could make a case for Wilfork because of what he means to the Patriots' defense. Although I think that in and of itself is kind of overrated because clearly some guys got into the Pro Bowl team based on rep and others got what they should get in on, is what they mean to their teams.
Oh, yeah. I definitely think Mankins could have easily been a starter in the Pro Bowl again like he was last year. I'm a little disappointed in that. That's probably about the only other one I would argue shouldn't have gone that way.
Hey, one other Pro Bowl note I want to bring up, and I wonder if you even noticed this, of Arizona's five selections to the NFC team. One of them was former Patriot and former Brown Bear, Sean Morey.
Oh, yeah, the special teams guy.
Special teams.
Exactly. Yeah, very happy about that. I've always liked Sean Morey, ever going back to his days up on the east side of Providence there. He was, he was part of some great teams with Mark Whipple back then.
Oh, yeah.
Big part of the offense. But, you know, he was drafted by New England, local boy, made good.
Mm-hmm.
That was a Pete Carroll pick.
Yep.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it was.
I think it was the last year of the Pete Carroll.
I think it was the last year. Yeah, right.
And really, you know, he stuck around as practice squad guy here and there. I really wish he was, still here with New England only because, you know, here's the personal connection to him.
What great success. He's been in the league now for 11 years? 10 years?
Since 99.
So 10 years. This was his
10th year. This is 10th year, yeah.
And good grief.
He's been fortunate enough to win a Super Bowl with the Steelers.
Won it with the Steelers, right.
Been named a captain of his team mm-hmm. When he was with the Steelers. I'm not sure if he's a captain here or not, but now he's making a Pro Bowl.
So he's got a Super Bowl ring, he's been in the Pro Bowl, and he's lasted in the league for 10 years as largely a special teams guy.
He's sort of Larry Izzo.
Yes, that's exactly right. He is Larry Izzo, mm-hmm. pretty much, yeah.
Good for him. That's a good story. The league could use more guys, just, you know, character guys like him.
When I saw that this week, or yesterday, especially when he got in the Pro Bowl team, I said, man, I bet they're celebrating over on the east side.
Sure,
you know,
sure are.
Those, you know, the coaches and everybody that had, you know, because Sean Morey was really one of the players that, you know, brought Brown football back to respectability within the last 10 to 15 years. He was a
Absolutely.
Huge part of that.
No doubt.
Yeah, so really kind of cool. And again, you're right. It's a Massachusetts kid. It's a local boy. Mm-hmm. Makes the Pro Bowl. And obviously, you don't see that every year around here either.
Right.
So I think that in and of itself is also a pretty neat deal. And I didn't want the whole Pro Bowl discussion to go by without at least mentioning it. And it just so happens that Sean Morey's coming back with his Arizona Cardinals this weekend to play the Patriots. So.
Yeah, that'll be another interesting, special team. When you come down to this part of the season and playoffs on the line, bad weather, it often comes down to a play on special teams deciding the game. So you wonder if the newly elected Pro Bowler will make a play that proves to be significant in that game or not.
You got to feel like he'll be charged up. He has, I think, to me, the most significant, memorable special teams play of the year when Arizona beat Dallas and he blocked the punt and he broke the foot of who was it? Was it McBrier, I think, for Dallas?
Yeah, the punter.
Yeah, the punter.
Yeah, Matt McBrier.
Yeah, he broke Matt McBrier's foot because of it. You know, basically, well, actually, his foot ran into Sean Morey and it broke his foot.
Yeah, right.
You know, but that's how Arizona ended up winning the game in overtime, I think it was, correct?
I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, so to me, I mean, just that I saw that replay on a ground level camera, which you don't get to see a lot of. Makes me appreciate, you know, sideline shooting all the more now.
Yeah.
Because you get to see angles that you don't normally get to see when you watch a game on television or from the press box even.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a devastating play. I mean, to me, it was basically someone taking their thumb and squishing somebody. And that's what he did on the play. It was a tremendous, tremendous play. And, if anybody deserves special teams not like that, for that one play alone, Sean deserves it. So I thought that was a pretty cool play, even though it happened against the Cowboys. I still hold a soft spot for them. You know,
well, you're a Texas guy, John.
Come on. I mean, I spent my first 28 years in Texas, so what can I tell you?
Oh, I need to get your reaction then to the Heisman.
Screw job.
Really?
Oh, yeah. But I knew it was going to happen. I knew it was going to happen. See, here, what I thought was
I thought Colt McCoy was going to get it, too, I'd be honest.
No, I never thought Colt was going to get it. I thought that, you know, I figured that Bradford would get it because of Oklahoma, you know, just the momentum they had created late in the year with all those 60-point games. Pretty hard to ignore that. And I thought Bradford would probably, get in on the tail end of that. But what I really thought would happen was that because Bradford and McCoy are from the same area, same conference, same region, same everything, I thought they canceled each other out and that Tebow would get it by default.
That was what
I thought.
He got the most first-place votes.
Tebow did get the most first-place votes, so I got that part right. But, you know, I actually thought he'd actually win the trophy again because of that. But as it turns out, like I said, Bradford had the support because he rode in on Oklahoma's, you know, tail feathers. So, what can you say? I mean, he did have a great year, okay? He had a
all
great year.
Did. All of them had really good
They
years.
All three did. You really could not have gone wrong with any of the three.
The only thing that really surprised me, John, was, I mean, and after you saw the voting, I guess you could understand, but Graham Harrell didn't even get an invite to New York.
Yeah, I thought that was a bit of a snub. And see, the Heisman Committee knows in advance what the votes look like.
Yeah.
The votes are turned in after the end of the regular season.
Right.
You know, before, I think, the conference title games and all that kind of garbage. And there's sort of a line of demarcation. You know, if guys are relatively close, they're going to invite them. Some years it's five guys, some years it's three like this year, other years it could be four. There's no real set number on who you invite to the Heisman ceremony.
No,
but
not
because
at all.
There was such a gap between third, which is where Tebow actually finished, unbelievable,
right,
and fourth, where Harrell was, they decided to leave him out.
I guess so, but just, I don't know, based on the year they had and the hype around that team, and I just thought as a, you know, I don't know, just on a personal story, can you just make room for one more guy?
Well, you would think, because, you know, it was kind of a neat story to have, you know, first of all four of them being quarterbacks.
Right, exactly.
You know, because that really doesn't happen all that often, even though you may think it does. But usually there's a running back or a wide receiver or somebody.
Right.
You know, but these were all quarterbacks. So this was definitely the year of the quarterback. And three of the quarterbacks from the same conference,
right,
which is phenomenal.
Right.
And not only the same conference, the same division within the conference.
Yeah.
That's what, I mean, the Big 12 South, you may never see another division like that ever.
It's going to be hard to duplicate, that's for sure.
No, it's kind of cool. I mean, I'm disappointed for Colt, but I'm not disappointed because he's coming back next year. And, you know, so
I think they all are, right? I mean,
well, Bradford, the jury's still out. Tebow, I think the jury's still out. I don't think that either one has definitively decided. McCoy is the only one that's definitively decided he's coming back.
Well, good for him.
I think both Tebow and Bradford, last I saw, were going to send out, you know, feelers and allow the system to work for them to see if they could find a consultant who would tell them where they could go. Mm. Now, the better question is, who of the three makes the better pro quarterback? That might be the better question.
Oh, boy. Well, I need to see a lot more improvement from Tim Tebow as a passer.
Well, can I say this? Yesterday, Andy Hart and I talked about this in our little crossover before the show.
Uh-huh.
He had heard from several people, he says at least a couple of people, that Tim Tebow is really liked by some people in the Patriots organization.
As a quarterback?
at quarterback. And that if he were to come out this year, the Patriots would definitely think about taking him, you know, perhaps, you know, with a second or a third round pick, if because that's where they think he probably would go anyway.
Well, that's
now, again, I don't know who these people are. I'll take Andy at his word because, you know, I know Andy, you know, in spite of what we might think of him, he gets around a little bit. So, the fact is that I guess that doesn't surprise me because they like his ability to kind of lead and they like his toughness and a lot of other things. Frankly, think of the buzz, you know.
Well, it only surprises me because of the Kevin O'Connell pick this past year.
Well, exactly. O'Connell's, you know, a big dude himself. But if you're the Patriots,
and he's a passer, John. Yes. That's the thing. He's a legitimate passer.
Yes, he is.
Tebow is not.
No, I would have to say he's not a pure passer in that kind of a sense. But I think the Patriots might be thinking here, and listen, just kind of hear me out on this one.
Sure.
I think the Patriots are thinking about a little bit more ability in their quarterbacks in the future because of what happened to Brady. And because of that, and we've seen Castle take advantage of his mobility and his foot speed and the quickness and his ability to finally decide, okay, now it's time to run and make chicken salad out of chicken feathers, you know, when it comes to the opportunity.
Yeah.
And so I honestly believe that having somebody who has the ability to, you know, be a little bit physically stronger and can run a little bit, a guy like a Tebow, mm-hmm. I mean, you know you're going to have the backup quarterback job open next year, Eric. How about Tim Tebow, Heisman Trophy winner? What's wrong with that as your backup?
Again, I come back to the fact that I question his passing ability. I need to see more out of him.
How much is he going to play other than the preseason? You know, God willing, Tom Brady able to stay on his 2 feet next year.
Well,
how much would he play? How much pure of a pro passer does the guy need to be next year? Could he not come in and learn under Josh McDaniels and learn under Tom Brady for a year or two and then let him take over the reins?
I
have to admit, I'm kind of fired up about it.
Well,
I don't think it'll happen, okay? I do not believe it'll happen. First of all, because I don't think Tebow is going to come out. I think he'll come back for senior year. I do.
I think that's the right move, too.
And I believe that probably will be the move he'll make.
I think that's
But
right
let's
move.
Just say somebody gets in his ear, okay, and says, you know what, Tim? You could be a second-round pick. And you know what? I've heard that the Patriots like you already. Well, it could happen. You know how crazier things have happened. It could happen.
I do. I'm just thinking, okay, let's assume that happens, all right?
Okay.
You've got MVP Tom Brady.
Right.
You've got third-round pick. No slouch, 4-year starter in college, Kevin O'Connell. You've got Heisman Trophy winner, Tim Tebow. That's a lot of quarterback controversy.
No. I don't think there's any quarterback controversy.
It's a lot of intrigue. Let me rephrase it then. There's a lot of intrigue.
There's great intrigue. Look, with all due respect to Kevin O'Connell, all right, he came from San Diego State. Okay? Yes, can he throw the football? Is he big? Is he physical? Yes. But you got a chance for the Heisman Trophy winner, Tim Tebow, guy who has passed for 3, rushed for 1. I mean, come on, he's that kind of guy.
He can
beat you with his feet and his physical play as well as with his arm, and probably more so with his physical play now. If he worked for a couple of years, you know, in Tom Brady's shadow, mimicking him, and what did Matt Castle say he's done over the last 4 years?
Yeah.
He's learned under Tom Brady.
Yep.
There's
yep.
no reason that Tim Tebow couldn't do the same, have a year or two of Josh McDaniels before somebody pulls him away, because you know that's going to happen, right? It's going to happen eventually.
Yeah.
Josh is going to go off and be a head coach.
Yeah.
But if you have him for another year or two where he could actually work with a guy like Tebow, work on his delivery, work on his arm slotting, work on his pro demeanor, for lack of a better thing, you know he's a quality guy. You know, he's a God-first kind of guy. Not that anybody who's not isn't a quality individual, but he shows it. He portrays it. He knows how to play the PR game the right way. Looks to be a quality individual, and because of that, he looks to fit right into the Patriot mold.
Fair points all. Let me counter that with this.
Go.
When I was doing my scouting, my research for last year's draft, we went to the combine, Andy and I did. We came back. We got our game film. We studied all that up till draft day.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who stood out the most to me on film was Kevin O'Connell.
Okay.
As far as quarterbacks go.
Really? Out of
I thought he was
the what was the
I thought he was the best quarterback available in that draft. And when New England took him in the third round, I almost jumped for joy because I thought it was the best pick of the draft. I thought it was the steal of the draft.
In your estimation, what made
I was looking at I was looking at film of a guy who it wasn't just what he did on film, it was stuff that I heard afterwards too, and I'll get to that in a second. But on film I saw a guy who you think Castle's athletic and can run with the ball? This guy was better. You think Castle can throw an on-target ball? I thought this guy was better. You saw a guy who was a four-year starter in college, captain for 4 years of his team. Obviously, he had leadership skills. Then I hear from scouts when I'm at the combine talking about how the only player they could compare him to at the NFL level at that point, a year ago at this time, was Vince Young in terms of athletic ability.
Get out. Serious?
And they thought that O'Connell was better than Vince at reading defenses at that point, last year, before he was even in an NFL system.
Wow.
And when I was looking at Matt Ryan, who's had a great year, Joe Flacco, who's had a great year, all these other quarterbacks, the kid from Hawaii, the name escapes me.
Colt Brennan.
They were all the big names last year. They supposedly had all the tools. When I was watching film of them, I would see things that I didn't really care for. Like, for instance, Ryan used to key in on one receiver and not check off.
Not look away, right.
Right. Now, obviously, he's had a great rookie year. He's probably going to be the rookie of the year offensively. It's going to be tight with him and Flacco, but I think he's going to get it. He's had a great year.
Ryan deserves it, I think.
Flacco has had a much better year. He looked to be a stiff in the pocket on the game films that we watched of him last year.
Aren't Ryan's numbers better?
Oh, they are. I still think Ryan's going to get it. I think it'll be close, though. I think it'll be a close vote. You know, certainly those two guys have done better than I expected them to, given what I saw of them on tape. But of all of them, I was most impressed with O'Connell. And I thought he had the most tremendous upside and was most ready of any quarterback that I saw in that draft. I was ecstatic when New England got him. I said to Andy, as soon as that happened, I said, New England has their quarterback of the future. They have their next Tom Brady already.
Okay.
And I had said that from day one. Now, I've seen enough Florida games, and the past couple of years, I've seen Tebow play enough to know that he's physically intimidating. He's bigger than any quarterback he's probably Dante Culpepper-like in his size. He's 230, 240-something for a quarterback, 6'3", or whatever. Mm-hmm. He should really be playing another position, like fullback or linebacker or something. He's enormous for that position. Certainly can run. You see the hits he takes as a college player, and you have to wonder if at this level, the guys are a lot bigger, a lot faster, can hit a lot harder than guys in the SEC, as good as the SEC is in recruiting talent. I just don't know how long you're going to last if you're going to have him be that kind of player that he is at Florida, where he runs a lot and takes all those hits. Now, if you want to turn him into a passer, okay, yeah, it'd be great to get him on a team with a guy like Tom Brady behind whom he can learn for a while. But my argument is I think they've already got their next quarterback. If they were to take Tebow in this mix, I don't think it would be as the next franchise quarterback. I think they would use him in different ways, maybe throw him out there as a running back, as a fullback, as a slot receiver, as something. I don't think they would, maybe as a wildcat quarterback. Maybe they have the Jets do with Justin Smith. They have a certain package that they have just for him. When he's goal line, short yardage situation, perfect situation. You put in a guy like Tebow, he's a legitimate quarterback threat. He may not be the best passer in the world, but he's a legitimate threat to throw the ball. He's a legitimate threat to run the ball. And you have, hopefully somebody else at running back who can be a threat back there with him. You have a legitimate wildcat threat with him. And you have a very good Heisman Trophy winning backup quarterback. I just argue I think they already have their next starter whenever Brady decides to call it quits.
Well, you make a pretty compelling argument. I didn't realize that you thought that highly of him, nor did other people also think that highly of him. And maybe that's because, number one, he toiled at San Diego State, which, for people in the Northeast, it's relative obscurity.
Sure.
And on top of that, San Diego State's program is horrible.
They have been over the past few years, yeah. And, he actually led his team in rushing San Diego State last year. I believe it was He might have even done it years prior, but I know last year he did. And he, you know, obviously led them in passing, too.
Well,
but
how much, then, of San Diego State's, shall we say, subpar play do you have to blame on the quarterback? I mean,
I think he played well despite the team around him. That's my point.
So you're telling me they just didn't have anybody
didn't have
recruited
any weapons.
Around him?
They had no weapons, right. They had no weapons.
Isn't there something to the argument, though, that a quarterback should allow his team to play better if the quarterback is really good?
To an extent, sure, but like you said, I didn't see enough of his games to know whether or not. Well, let me put it to you this way: I did start following him towards the end of last year because that's when the name started coming out. Mm-hmm. And you know, they have a couple of those post bowl senior games.
Yeah, right.
You know, like the East West Shrine Game.
Right, right.
There's another one of those in Hawaii, I believe. I think he played in two of those games. There's the Blue-Gray game, I think, is another one like that, where the guys who are draft eligible play against each other. So you're basically playing against your peers, your best competition who's going to be in the draft that year. O'Connell played, I'm going off the top of my head, so I might be off on the numbers a little bit here, but there was one game, I think it was the Hawaii game, where he came in as the backup on a team that was getting demolished, and he led them on two touchdown drives. Mm-hmm. I think it was the only two scores of that game for that team. Mm-hmm. So basically he comes in and sets the world on fire. And I think in the other game, he had the best numbers of all the quarterbacks who played, and there were like three or four quarterbacks who played in that game. So even among his peers in that situation, he stood out, which just confirmed what I had thought all along. And I think he was building such momentum and such hype leading up to the draft that I think New England might have taken him a little bit higher than maybe they even wanted to, because they were concerned that other teams were going to try to steal him in the fourth or even the third round, too. So they had to jump up and do it.
Interesting. Well, you know what?
That all being said, I wouldn't mind if they took Tim Tebow, because, like I said, I think he'd be a great threat and a great other option. And I think there are other things you can do with him besides quarterback. And I think it's advantageous to
what
teams.
What else would you do with him besides quarterback? Where would you play him?
Fullback, maybe.
Really?
Running back, tailback. I think he's a pretty good runner. Yeah.
Wow.
I do. I mean, I don't say he's not going to turn into a good passer. I just haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen enough of it, and I don't know if he can develop into that. I know he can run with the ball, and I know he's great in that, you know, whatever you want to call that formation, wildcat or mm-hmm. spread or whatever you want to term it, single wing, whatever. He's great at that, and I think that'd be a great option package to have. I think every NFL team is starting to develop it in one form or another, just because it's hard to stop. When you have the pieces, it's hard to stop that offense, especially in short yardage, as Miami proved earlier this year. And even in long yardage, they've scored touchdowns from midfield with that play. So if you can get a guy like that and sort of rotate him in here and there when a defense isn't expecting it, I think it's great. And plus, he's if he can turn into a passer as well, great.
I think you kind of burst my bubble a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry. Like I said,
all fired up, geeked up over something that's not going to happen.
I don't say it's not going to happen. I think it. Hey, I don't doubt for a second that it could happen. If what Andy said is true, I wouldn't be surprised if Tebow were to come out and New England were to take him.
Well, look, I think the bottom line is here, the Patriots don't want to be caught short, knowing that, you know, it tells me that, you know, even though it has been discussed, that the Patriots probably don't have any intention of franchising Castle, unless for some reason or another they can swing a trade beforehand and just, you know, kind of, you know, push it through that way. Which means that Matt Castle's gone, and they're not going to get anything for him. I hope that they can get something for him, because they're the ones that took the time to nurture him and give him the time to learn, and this is what they got out of it. So the Patriots should be rewarded for that. That's what teams should get.
Oh, I agree. I think they
should
try to get something.
So they put the time and the effort into Castle, and I think they should get something for him. So in that regard, yeah, franchise him, because that way you can get something. But I think, you know, they're also scared of being stuck with an $11 million backup. And so I don't know that they want that to happen.
Well,
and so I'm sure they're looking at other options.
John, there's a lot of bad teams out there with bad quarterbacks who I think – I don't think Matt Castle will lack from suitors this year. There are a lot of bad teams out there.
Well, see, that's exactly the point. I don't think – I think there are a lot of teams that will come after him, and I think he's going to be a very rich man one way or the other. He's going to make – and you know what? Congratulations to him.
Oh, yeah.
Kudos to
him.
Absolutely. He's earned it. If anybody has earned it, he has. And he is a tremendous story. He's a tremendous credit to his family, you know, to his coaches, to this – he's just – he is the All-American – he's Jack Armstrong, the All-American boy. That's what he is. And so because of that, why shouldn't the Patriots reap some of the benefits of their teaching
and
their nurturing?
Oh, I agree completely.
And the only way they can do that, Eric, is if they franchise him.
Right. But I don't think they'll be stuck. I don't think they'll be stuck with him.
But I think that's part of the reason, if what Andy is saying is true and they're really interested in a guy like Tebow, I think to me they're a little afraid that, you know, they don't need to be paying $11 million for a backup.
They won't end up having to, because I think they'll work out a deal with some other team to take him.
Well, they have to franchise him first, though.
They do, and he has to sign the tender. You're right.
And he has to sign the tender. And if he does that, then they can push through a trade. So, you know, they're still on the hook. They're still on the hook. No matter how you look at it, they're on the hook. You know, they can come up with somebody. You know, I don't know. There are probably – we could probably sit here and come up with 10 teams that could use a quarterback next year.
Kansas City.
Well, okay.
Detroit. Right.
So now you want to do that. Okay.
San Francisco.
Okay. What did we start with? Kansas City.
Kansas City, Detroit, San Francisco.
San Francisco.
I'll throw Chicago in there.
Chicago could still use one, although I doubt – I'm not sure that – but, yeah, they could probably use one.
Tampa Bay,
definitely. That's five. How about
– I would argue the Jets. Because I think
Favre's coming back.
Yeah, but I think they need a quarterback to take over.
Okay, but May not be next year. But you could even throw the Jets in there. Sure, that might be six.
St. Louis,
seven.
Minnesota. I don't think Tavares Jackson is the answer.
Yeah, even though Tavares Jackson has played very well, obviously, in fact, I've just read a story yesterday where they're talking about, you know, the one they bring him back, Farrah, you know, and I'm like, are you kidding me? Yeah. So, yeah, Minnesota probably would be kind of like the Jets.
How many is that?
That's eight. That's eight teams right there. Who else in the AFC?
Oakland?
No. I don't think so.
You think Jamarcus Russell?
Yeah.
I think they're going to turn into something?
Yeah, I think they'll stand pat with him.
Okay.
Houston?
No.
Houston?
I could throw them in that category.
Nine?
I would throw them in there.
Yeah, why not? Why not Houston?
Cleveland? Cincinnati?
Jacksonville? Well, Cleveland has Brady Quinn. I think he's...
Yeah,
I
that's
think
true. He's hurt.
Well,
Cincinnati?
Depends on if Carson Palmer comes back or not.
Yeah.
How well he comes back.
All right, so you know what? What we've done?
We've got our 10 teams, though.
We've got 10 teams already that could use a quarterback.
Yeah.
So, you know, there will be an unbelievable market for him, and Matt Castle will be one rich young person next year. And he deserves every penny of it based on what he's done. He deserves every penny of it. So, you know, I'm totally an advocate. You know, I wasn't this way when someone first mentioned it to me a couple of months ago. I said, what, are you nuts? But the more I've thought about it, I have done a complete and total 180 on this. They should franchise him. They need to get something out of him based on what they put into him.
Sure. I've said that all along. I didn't think they should ever let him just walk away. I thought if they weren't going to – if he hadn't made the final roster in this past training camp, my argument was if you knew that he wasn't going to be your guy, trade him then to get something for him. Now I'm even – more of that opinion that they need to get something for him because, I mean, look what he's done. He's proven he can do it.
So you just, you know, once the season is over, I think that's one of the first things you have to work on is tendering him, you know, let him know this is what's going to happen. You're going to get your money one way or the other, but we are going to try to trade you so you can go off and start someplace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't know that he would have a tough – I mean, first of all, I think you also have to realize the Patriots should look at this, you know, somewhat selfishly as well. There is no guarantee that Tom Brady is going to come back and be the Tom Brady that we all know.
Well
– there's no guarantee, especially from major knee reconstruction. We've seen it in the past with quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. I think too many people are just dismissing it out of hand and saying, oh, Brady's coming back. He'll be all right. Too many people are saying that. And you know what? It doesn't work like that.
Well,
I think more than anything else, they might franchise him because they want, you know, an $11 million insurance policy. And I throw out $11 million as an arbitrary, you know, number because I think that's I
not
think
a bad number.
No, it's a good number, but I think that's what would end up being the average of the top five guys at the position.
Mm-hmm. I think it was 14.
Is it 14 now?
The top five average?
No, seriously.
Well, we'll try to effort those numbers. But
you take the top five.
It's certainly not. You're in the right neighborhood anyway, John.
Yeah. Okay. But even if it's 14, holy moly! That's
good money.
Yeah, that's a ton of money. For 1 year, that's unbelievable.
Mm.
But he'd be a rich man one way or the other, mm-hmm. no matter what he gets.
Yeah.
I mean, remember, I heard somebody say the other day, well, he's probably more of a $7 or $8 million a year guy.
Well, oh, well.
Now we're really picking nits here, you know? I mean, what the hell's the difference?
It's enough to retire.
Well, I wouldn't pay him $11 million. I'd only give him $7 million. Well, are you nuts? You give him what the market will bear. That's what you give him, and he's earned every penny of it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the whole thing is just boggles the mind. And by the way, I love the fact now that I look down at my clock here and it's already 3:35 Eastern time. So that was the best part of this whole conversation. It just went and we didn't even think about it. Did I keep you from going off and writing today?
No more than usual, my friend. No, I'm in good shape.
All right. Well,
still got a lot to do, but
don't we both? I have a basketball broadcast tonight too, so that's the way it works.
That's right. Hey, talk to me about that too, because I don't think we've really gotten a chance to talk much Friar basketball lately. What's going on?
All right, everybody just shut down their computer
quickly, because you know we love Friar basketball.
Oh, they'll be fine. They'll be fine. You know, they still have to learn the new system under the new coach.
They need to hit some threes.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true.
And improve their free throw shooting.
I think they're capable. I just, you know, I hope it happens sooner rather than later. Otherwise, there won't be another postseason paycheck for Johnny here again. So. We all, of course, know that's all it's all about, you know?
Well, hey, you got to do it. You got to do what you got to do.
Listen, you don't work for a school or an organization or be tied to somebody for as long as I have, and this is my 20th year with them. Without, you know, certainly having an interest in their well-being. And the same thing is with the Patriots. Most everybody who listens to this program realizes that this is my 16th year with the team.
Mm-hmm.
I predate the Crafts by 1 year.
That's right.
So I've been around as long as anybody. In fact, the only person who has longevity on me and that entire organization, to my knowledge, is Dante Scarnecchia.
And a couple of the equipment guys.
And maybe a couple of the equipment guys.
Yeah,
that's about it. That's about it.
Pretty good. And maybe one of the scouting people?
I really don't know enough of the particulars there to know. There might be, I would say. I'd have to look into the media guide
it's
here.
It's a handful, though, at best.
Yeah.
Very
but there
few
aren't
people.
Many.
There aren't many at all, no.
And so, you know, the original point here is, you develop a rooting interest. You want to see the team that you're involved with do well because it makes your job that much more enjoyable.
Just like any other job. If your company's doing well, chances
are
your
company's doing well
you're doing
and you're kicking
well.
Ass in sales and everything, you're loving life right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the way it works.
Right.
And, of course, when your team is not doing well and your job isn't going well, you're not doing well.
Mm-hmm.
And so this really is no different than any other walk of life that anybody else is in.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, it's better, and we have lived high on the hog, so to speak, since 2001, and you always hope that it can continue, but you also know that at some point in time, it will end. It has to. It's a fact of life. What goes around comes around.
Yeah.
Isn't that a great saying, by the way? You know who first told me that?
Who's that?
George Gervin.
Really? The Iceman?
Yes, the Iceman himself. Rookie.
Yes. Really?
Hey, Ice, what's up? Rookie, what's up? Yes, Ice, what's happening? What goes around comes around, brother. That was it. I'm like, yeah, you know what? He's right. I said, that's pretty good wisdom for George Gervin, you know?
And how did you know George Gervin?
When I did the Spurs games back in the 1980s.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, I worked with the Spurs for 4 seasons. Did their TV and their radio, yeah.
One thing he could do was finger roll.
Finger roll. Well, those are great commercials.
Love that.
Oh, man. I mean, you know, I love the fact, you know, you remember a few years ago, in fact, he did a bunch of promos for ESPN with Dick Vitale,
mm-hmm.
you know, on that fake sitcom they were doing.
Yep.
You remember that?
I do.
He was hilarious in those.
He's a funny guy.
I got to tell you, I always knew he could do that kind of stuff. You know, he was always quiet and fairly well reserved and aloof even when he was a player. And a lot of people thought he was full of himself and stuck up. And, you know, George Gervinho, he's kind of a dummy. And, you know, he wasn't that way at all. You had to be around the guy to know that, you know, he was a pretty good cut up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he wasn't a choir boy either. I don't want to make him out to be like that. All those guys back in the 80s, I could tell you stories that would curl your nose hairs about being on the road with these guys. But the fact of the matter is, and here we are, now we're going into the NBA. The fact of the matter is that these guys all had great personalities, and you got to know them. And the reason you got to know them is because you got to follow them and be with them and all that kind of stuff. And to me, that's why a team broadcaster can be as valuable a storytelling part, PR part of an organization as anybody, as anybody, because they're the ones that travel and see and experience, and you know it's not all PR spin, you know?
Yep.
So if a guy's likable, it's going to show in how you talk about him. And if a guy is a jerk, it's going to show too. That's usually the way it works out. It all works out that way. But, yeah, Gervin told me that. What goes around comes around.
Wow.
Actually, it was he told me that in light of the fact that I actually pulled an April Fool's joke on him. And I was doing morning drive radio on WOAI in San Antonio. This was like April 1st of like 84, somewhere around in there. And I traded him to the Lakers.
Oh, really?
You know, which at the time was, you know, the Spurs' arch rival.
Uh-huh.
Because they were in the Western Conference Finals every year, and the Lakers always beat the Spurs when met with Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and they couldn't. And Spurs couldn't ever beat them. So I actually checked with Ice first. I said, George, would you mind if I did a little goofy something on April Fool's Day? He goes, Nah, man, whatever. You know, that's all he would say. Nah, man, whatever. Whatever you want to do, that's cool. And so I'd like, okay, I did that, and of course I didn't tell anybody else, and I probably should have told PR. Because when I did it,
they got inundated.
The phones ring. Yeah. Oh, my God. We got phone calls from all over the freaking world.
Huh.
And the Associated Press was nuts. And I'm like, hello, people. Let me. Is this thing on?
Yeah.
Did anybody check the calendar today?
Yeah.
You know? Oh, April 1st. Oh, you know, I got that kind of reaction.
So
right?
What came around?
I apologized after it was over.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, because of the controversy, and it made the front page of the news, the sports section in San Antonio. And of course, and that night I had to actually do the Cotton Fitzsimmons show. He was the coach of the Spurs at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to do that show on radio that night. And Cotton wanted to come on and do a whole big goofy thing because I had been taking a beating all day from people who were pissed off that I would trade George Gervin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm like, get a life. It's April Fool's Day. Are you people nuts? That seems to be my favorite saying lately. Are you nuts or something? And of course, they would ask me, or say, well, you're nuts for trading George Gervin. And how dare you, blah, 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 you know. And of course, naturally, the next year, what'd they do? They traded him. Or actually, they let him go, and Chicago picked him up. You remember that, right? The Chicago Bulls picked him up.
Might have been a little before me.
Yeah. John. Well, anyway, yeah, that's true. Were you even born then?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank God.
73. Well, I have to get back upstairs and do a little bit of writing before the day is out.
Okay, all right, I've bored you enough. Thank you.
No, not at all. I love tangents, John. That's why I bring them up all the time.
This show has been one long tangent, I think, today. But you know what, though? It's been a lot of fun. I love shows like this.
Me
because
too.
You just start talking, and we talk about interesting things. And I hope, my wish is that, and I guess largely from the feedback that we get on the show, Eric, that a lot of people like, you know, the conversations that we get into as well. So
good.
I hope that's still the case.
Good.
Thanks, buddy.
We'll do some more of it tomorrow, then.
Yep, sounds like a plan. Talk to you tomorrow.
All right.
All right, so we'll keep it here for a couple of moments inside Patriots Playbook. Wow, Dan, we haven't even taken a break today, have we?
Nope.
Do we need to take one?
Nope.
God, see, don't you just love agreeable people? I think it's awesome. All right, so I've got some emails here that I'll catch up with. Then what we'll do to end the program, we managed to get some of the interview with Steve Gostkowski and his reaction to reaching the Pro Bowl for the Patriots. So we'll end up the program with that today. We'll also tell you that tomorrow's show, in addition to Eric coming back in and going off on a good tangent, we'll find a good solid tangent we can get off on. And, yes, we will talk about the Patriots and Cardinals. But Russell Baxter will be with us tomorrow, as he always is on Thursday. And, yeah, you know, we got some serious playoff-caliber games to talk about this weekend, so I can't wait to jump into that with Russell. That's what I look forward to the most every week, you know, especially when games are important, you know. I really look forward to getting in and talking about it and having fun with it because that's what this program is all about. you know, we're just, you know, whether it's just me or when Eric comes in or when B-Lo comes in or whomever sits in or certainly Russell or anybody else when they come in, we're talking football, you know, and it starts out football. And, yeah, we might migrate for a minute to basketball or we might migrate to telling a couple of stories about our past, whatever, but it's all relatable in some form or fashion. And I know that you probably are that way with your friends or when you're out and you're talking football or Patriots or somebody at a bar or a location or wherever you may be and where you do that. And you know how conversations go. And that's the kind of thing that we try to do here. It's the other thing that we do here is also try to bring you some of the other media types and some of those who cover the other teams so you can get their perspective on that week's opponent. And we do that not only with either beat writers or web writers for the opposing team, but with the national media as well, so you get their perspective. And, you know, I'll give Dan some plaudits here for, you know, pulling in the likes of, you know, Ron Jaworski and, you know, who else have we had this year? We just had Daryl Johnston today and, what's his name?
Dan Dierdorf.
Thank you, Dan Dierdorf. Yeah, from earlier this year. I mean, this is all good stuff, right? We've had, in the past, we've had Boomer Esiason. We've had Adam Schefter from NFL Network. You know, Vic Carucci from NFL.com. We've had a lot of great national people who certainly have made the Patriots a stopover, you know, during the course of their season because of where the Patriots' stature is in the NFL. This year has been a little less so, and it's only because the Patriots have lost 5 games this year. But to me, that shouldn't have lessened the interest in this team at all. I understand where the story might get a little tired. Outside of our immediate area, I can understand where people would be even rooting against the Patriots. It's kind of like, oh, God, here come the Patriots again? I get that attitude, okay? I get it. I have to admit, as a kid growing up in Texas, it was kind of like, oh, man, the Celtics are winning again. Hated the Celtics. But now that I've lived in New England for 20 years and my kids have both grown up as Celtic fans because this is their hometown, this is where they grew up, they're naturally going to affiliate with the hometown teams, right? Well, certainly I follow the Celtics. I hated the Celtics when I was with the Spurs just because they always beat our butt. So, you know, but it's natural. And I'm flipped because it's just a part of my kids' lives, and if I want to have something in common with my kids, I got to like their teams. It's just the way it works. And obviously, who couldn't get into the Celtics last year? Because they had a great team, and they're 23-2 this year, and it's the best 25-game start in NBA history. So who couldn't get into that? It's easy to follow teams when they win, and because of the success, that's how the followings get going. And so I can see why somebody from New York, from Miami, Buffalo, from Indy, maybe less so Indy now, but Pittsburgh too, and could look at New England and say, oh, God, here come the Patriots again? Them again? I can't wait for them to lose. Enough of the Patriots already. I get that attitude. And, you know, it's hard to sustain. I also understand it's easy to just oversimplify and think that, well, once you've won, you're always going to win, and everybody needs to understand it will end at some point. But because of the story that the Patriots have been with the adversity they've overcome with the injuries and everything this year, to me, that has not lessened one iota the value of the national story that can be and is being told here by this version of the New England Patriots. And I said this, I think, a couple of weeks ago, maybe three, who knows, 2 or 3 weeks ago. If this team makes the playoffs, this should be the big story on Wild Card Weekend. It should be. It deserves to be. We should have the national media here, especially if this team wins a 6th straight division title, which is still within their reach. It should be the national story. Even if the Patriots have to go on the road and get in as the 6th seed, it's a story. And I hope that you, as Patriot fans and followers, can appreciate even a 9-5, you know, and of course, if it comes to that point, it'll have to be 11-5. An 11-5 season for what it is. And what it is a tremendous job of achievement and, yes, even overachievement by a bunch of guys who nobody gave a chance after one guy went down. Come on, you had your doubts too. We all did. Now, they could fall flat in the face and lose the next two, and then this whole story's moot. I don't think that's going to happen, and I don't think you think that's going to happen. So the story holds. It's a great story. I hope that at some point you know, when everything is over and done, I hope you can stop and here's the well-worn, trite cliche. I hope you can stop and smell the roses about this season and appreciate it for what it is. Because these kind of years don't come along. And it's kind of funny. The Patriots have had 2 years back-to-back like that, where these kind of years just don't come along all the time. Last year at 16-0 in the regular season, obviously, that's never come along before. Not to 16 games anyway. For Miami certainly did at 14. And then, of course, this year, to have a team be as, you know, wounded as they have been, to have a chance to win another division title, when admittedly the division is way better than what it was in the last couple of years. Very competitive, very strong competition from both the Jets and the Dolphins. The Dolphins have been, you know, the top turnaround story in the NFL this year. And having to overcome that in addition to the injuries and maybe Steven even still win a division? Come on. Big story. But I guess some of the national media are probably like some of the fans. Oh, the Patriots again? Jeez, when are we going to get rid of them? When can we? Can I get a timeout on the Patriots? Cover anybody but the Patriots. I think there's definitely that's a prevalent attitude based on some of the people that I know in the national media. I don't think we've really had a lot of that here on the program from some of the national media that have joined us here throughout the season, but there's still a feeling there, and I think you probably have seen it, you know, from some of the ESPN, you know, hacks and flacks and things like that. So just a sidelight there, but I still think the story is important and will continue to be told here. All right, let me share you a couple of emails that you guys took the time to write in. The question was of the day, anyway, of the guys, of the players who were named to the AFC Pro Bowl team, who do you think didn't really deserve to be there? Not so much a Pro Bowl snub, but who in your estimation really didn't deserve to be there? Paul sends this note from London, and he said, half of the Jets don't deserve to be there, especially Favre and Fanica. Ronnie Brown, he says, deserves ahead of Steve Slayton. I'm not saying it's a big shock, but I don't believe Reggie Wayne should be there ahead of Moss or another receiver. And Calvin Johnson, a Detroit's kicker, being snubbed as well. The kicker whose name I can't remember, 8 for 8, over 50 yards, if what I read was correct. Okay. Well, I give you one simple phrase for Detroit. 0-16, which is, look, you know, I think this week is probably their best week. I think beating New Orleans at home, more so than beating Green Bay on the road, I think that's probably, and I think it's on the road, yes, in the last week. I think that's their best chance to get a win. But is there anybody out there who isn't rooting for Detroit to go over? I mean, think about it. The Patriots went 16-0 last year, and the very next year, a team goes 0-16. That's remarkable. That's remarkable. That's just, that's stunning is what that is. So, in a sick way, probably even some Lions fans that are rooting for him to go 0-16. They've clinched the number one bid. What is, you know, the number one, you know, draft pick, what the heck difference does it make? Wow. That's unbelievable stuff. Yeah, look at this one. Stripper says, John, I didn't have power this weekend. Can you tell me who won the Heisman? Well, you didn't have power because you live in an outhouse, so it doesn't surprise me you don't have power. Hey, he had a good season. Bradford had a great season. You can't take it away. But strippers, 45-35. Okay, buddy? 45-35. And I don't care what you come back with, 45-35. Okay, pal? Okay. Sit on that one till next October. Let's see. James says, John, I was wondering how Matt Castle's quarterback stats compare to Tom Brady's first year stats. What I found is very interesting. Tom Brady, 11-5. He had a 63.9% completion, threw for 2,800 yards, 18 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. His passer rating was 86.5. Okay. Castle completed 63.8, so only a tenth of a percentage below Brady. He's thrown for 3,270 yards, so about 400 more yards than Brady. His touchdown-to-interception ratio is 18 TDs to 11 picks, so one pick less than Brady. And this is, of course, with still a couple of games to go here. And his quarterback rating is 87.1, which is 0.6 higher than Brady. He has also rushed for 232 yards. Brady had 43. So obviously his numbers, with still two games to play, very comparable, in fact, a little bit better than Tom Brady's. And James says, if you go by this, you have to say that so far Matt Cassel has done just as good or better than Tom Brady did in nearly the same number of games. James, I will not argue that point at all. I'm glad you brought it out, and I hope more fans realize that. It doesn't mean that Matt Cassel is going to be the second coming of Tom Brady. You realize that, right? But at the same time, though, it just underscores what kind of a year this young man has had, and it convinces me more than ever that the Patriots must, whatever they can do, in the best interest of the franchise, they need to get something for him because they put this sweat equity into developing Matt Cassel as a viable entity at quarterback in the NFL. They deserve it. They've worked on it. So, you know, franchise him. Get something for it. Work a trade if you have to, but, you know, get something for him. Dagmar in Miami says, I want to say that I feel more comfortable with this Patriots team after seeing our running back core having success this last Sunday. About Ellis Hobbs, I would say he is a terrific kickoff returner, but as a cornerback, he still gets eaten on simple or double move routes, especially those that develop in the red area. Don't get me wrong, he's fast, but it takes more than speed to be a threat at the cornerback position. You know, Dagmar, that's actually a very good point. And you're right. I've noticed the double move routes usually Ellis bites one way or the other because cornerbacks sometimes are known to gamble. He needs to gamble less. And maybe that's one of the reasons why, even though I hammer him for it, Delta O'Neal plays off of receivers as much as he does because he's afraid that double move is going to kill him. He doesn't have the speed or the foot speed to keep up with receivers anymore. So he's playing soft because he doesn't want to get beat, you know, over the top. I get that. But I think you got to adjust. You don't want to get beat, you know, time and time and time again short either. Got to find a way to get a happy medium. You know, okay, if you're playing 10 yards off a guy, move up. Go 7 yards off. Give yourself at least a little break, right? Dagmar says, I think he has all the natural athletic conditions to become a Pro Bowl corner. He just needs to be cautious with the space and the gap he leaves to opposite receivers. Yeah, you're right. Anyways, it is good to know that you were down here in Miami the day of the Snow Bowl. I wasn't here in the U.S., but I have the game on a collective DVD series called Three Games to Glory. Yep, that's something the Patriots marketed a few years ago. And he says, and you are right, Eric, it was a hell of a game. Best wishes from Miami. Thank you, Dagmar, for sending the note. Always glad that you chime in with your 2 cents worth. And it's always good to hear from you. Let's wrap up the program today yet again by telling you that tomorrow's program, Eric will rejoin us for the latest from Patriots practice. We'll have a little bit more on potentially Matt Light's condition for Sunday and whether or not he's able to go against the Cardinals. And what the rest of the participation report looks like. And we will also have Russell Baxter, the NFL research coordinator for ESPN, joining us on Thursdays as we run through the NFL schedule. And we'll take a good, solid examination. We'll put a thorough look at the playoff scenario under our own Patriots playbook microscope and see what is most likely to happen. And Mr. Numbers from the NFL ESPN, in Russell Baxter, he will either confirm or deny the possibility of those things happening. So it's always entertaining, and we hope that you can join us with him on tomorrow's show. We'll leave you today, first of all, by thanking Daryl Johnston from Fox Television for joining us earlier in the program. And if you tuned in late and you missed it, all I can tell you is what John Hannon would tell you. Download the podcast, right? There you go. And then you'll get a piece of it. Steve Gostkowski, Patriots Pro Bowl kicker, and his comments on reaching the Pro Bowl. And then we'll see you same patch time, same patch channel tomorrow.
What are your thoughts making the Pro Bowl?
You know, it's exciting, especially to be able to represent New England and the AFC. You know, it's an honor, but it's not something that I can let sink in really until I get there. You know, we've still got two games left in our season. We need to win both of them, and I need to put all my efforts and concentrations into these last two games and not, you know, what's going on in February. When the time hits then, I'll be able to really celebrate it and be excited for it.
How much is this a reward for hard work?
Well, anytime you get recognized, especially by coaches and other players, as, you know, they thinking that you've done a good job and having a good season, it's always rewarding. But, you know, I don't really set out personal goals like that. I just try to, you know, each game make the kicks to help the team win. And, you know, when you have that attitude and it pays off, you know, stuff like that comes with the territory. Just trying to play good each game and you know, not letting the team down. And when the team needs to put points on the board, to be there for the team. And that's the kind of attitude I've always taken into field goal kicking.
Steve, when you left college and came into the post, did you ever envision yourself
as a Pro Bowl caliber kicker or just a kicker that can do his job?
No, I just try to be as consistent as possible. I mean, the extra rewards and teams that you make, like all conference and college and stuff, I mean, that's great and everything, but you know, I don't want to be remembered by that. I just want to be remembered by as a consistent player and a team player and a guy who, you know, when your team needs you, is going to step up, and that's a lot more rewarding to me than any kind of accolade you could get. But you know, it's nice to get some along the way, and it's very rewarding, especially to represent such a good team over in Hawaii. It's pretty cool.
I'm sure you would want to be known also as somebody who can handle bad elements. You might get some of that on Sunday.
Yeah, well, we've had a couple bad element games since I've been here. It's nothing you can worry or stress over. You just got to deal with it. Coach Belichick already told us whatever weather we're getting this week, we're outside to deal with it. And so, you know, we get to practice in the mush all week, so we'll be ready for it on Sunday.
You were a pretty good kicker here. Does that make this even more satisfying?
I mean, you know, anytime you come in after a guy who's done what Vinatieri did, you know, it's a little tough, but it's nothing I ever thought about. But, you know, he paved the way for kickers and has gotten kickers a lot of respect, and I respect everything he's done and hope I can do half the things that he does in his career. And it's just, you know, when fans or somebody comes up to me and says, we haven't missed that guy, you know, which it's nice to hear. You know, it's hard. You can't duplicate what that guy did, but to be mentioned in the same name or the same light or you're doing a good job just like he did, that's pretty cool.
Was your phone ringing off the hook yesterday?
I had a lot of text messages, more text messages than calls.
How did you find out, Steve?
Coach Belichick called me at like 3 o'clock, told me he had some good news. I thought I was in trouble when he called, but he told me he had some good news. That's what the first thing he said, and it was exciting to hear. And, you know, got off the phone with him, went and told my wife, and she was pretty excited. She's already ordering bathing suits, so she's ready to go.
Who else is going to head out to Hawaii?
I don't know. Yeah, that's talking. I know my wife's coming, so we'll see about the family.
What about Lonnie and Chris?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to take Lonnie. Chris says he doesn't want to go. He just wants a nice little present. So I'm going to hook him up with a present and see if Lonnie wants. Hopefully Lonnie will get selected as a snapper. You know, he's long overdue to get a chance to go snap down there. You know, he's such a good snapper, and it stinks that you can't vote on those players. But hopefully, whoever the coaches are, we'll pick him. So.
Thank you.